Uh-huh. Up you go. Up you go. Come on, you can do it. It's okay, Bodhi.
That's my girl.
See. Unmute audio.
Can you hear me?
Now I can. I couldn't before. Do you know Jen Hammond?
I don't.
No, neither do I.
But that's fine. Jan, can we see your face? You're muted, but you can hear me.
And something is ringing. I'm not sure what it is. Oh, I know what it is. The alarm that says,
hey, oh. Jan. There's Jan Hammond. You're muted, Jan. We didn't hear you're speaking, but you're muted.
I unmuted myself, but it remuted me. I'm in Ohio, but I'm good friends with Ayn Whistler. He's the one that, anyway, so I'm going back to an exercise class before this starts. So I'm going to blacken myself again.
Okay. But
I will be back.
Okay, good. An exercise class before this starts. Okay. Anyway, she says she's coming back, but if you close the door, she won't be able to come back.
Well,
that's okay.
We'll just see what develops. Do you know who she's talking about? She's friends.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Ayn, he'll be here. He's coming tonight. He's one of the people that always comes on Sundays, and he lives up in Angel Fire. Yeah, very nice person, and he said he was coming this evening. We'll see. Sure. Yeah.
So you had a very successful Sunday?
It's always pretty successful. There were about 38 people, so it was 20 less than the week before, or the month before, but I had gotten emails from probably almost all of those 20 people telling me they couldn't come for various reasons.
Oh, well, that's nice to know that they at least acknowledged.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're very committed. It's a large group, and they're from all over the place. I mean, U.S., Canada, Europe, Israel, lots of different places. So they say they're coming next time. We'll see. It gets too big. It's not comfortable in a way for me because I like to greet everybody and say hello. But so last month it was right on that edge. It was almost 60, between 55 and 60 people.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it was fun.
I actually had a conversation with Brian Lesage about this, the business of trying to manage retreats, online retreats, so that they aren't a cast of thousands.
I don't have to worry about that.
I beg your pardon?
I don't have to worry about a cast of thousands.
Well, we talked about the fact that, you know, for a lot of us, that doesn't feel like a retreat. No. Number one, you can't connect with people. And he said, you know, what you can do is sign up for a retreat and say, as long as the numbers suit my personal style or my needs or whatever, I think of a more skillful way to say it, I'll be a participant. But if it reaches, say, 50 or 60 people, then I'm going to have to bow out. And uh-huh. he said, if enough people say that, uh-huh. then Dharma teachers they're going to listen.
Sure.
They may not make any changes, but they'll at least know, that yeah. there are people who aren't, who don't find it supportive to their practice right. to try to be in a retreat, especially online.
Yeah.
So many
people. The month before, 50, I said 58, maybe somewhere between 55 and 58 people. It was manageable. It was fine. More than that would have been difficult, but it wasn't more than that. So there's Jacqueline.
Well, good. I'm glad it worked out for you. So Jacqueline, is this someone? Hello.
Hi, Jackie. She's from Canada.
Yeah. Hi, Marcia.
Hi there.
Got
glad
it.
To see you.
Pardon?
Glad to see you.
Oh, I'm happy to see you too, Marcia.
Yes.
Uh-huh. I'll just change my name here.
Change your name?
To Jackie.
Oh, Jackie. It says Jacqueline.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, we still have about 10 minutes, so there'll be others coming.
Have you been well, Marcia?
I am well, yes. Yes.
You know, Marcia, Taos Mountain Sangha participants are often right on the dot, if not a minute or two after.
That's true. I know that. It's okay. We live in Taos, we expect it. I guess, or we're used to it or something.
It's one of the many possibilities.
Yes. You have a Christmas tree already. Is that a Christmas tree behind you?
No, it's my lemon tree. And I also have a rosemary bush.
Uh-huh. And
they have to come in during the winter months. So
it's decorated from here, but I can't see it very well.
It's probably the lights that are in the background. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Barbara.
Does look like a Christmas tree.
It does.
That's where I put my Christmas tree when the season is right. It means I have to find another place for the lemon tree, but that's okay.
My neighbors on to the south of me, right next door, their Christmas lights, they have the most Christmas lights on any house that I've probably ever seen.
Oh, really?
They're all up already.
Well,
they put them up.
In El Prado, behind the El Prado liquor store, that street, which is all one family, it's Tully Gonzalez's family, they are always totally lit. Yeah, and I think they may leave their lights up year round.
Oh, well, my next door neighbors, they've been up for about a week and a half.
Wow.
It's interesting. It's kind of cheerful, you know. And I think they did it on purpose to kind of cheer themselves up and cheer everybody else up who goes by their house.
Well, I think it's not a bad idea, particularly.
I thought it was a pretty good idea too. I was so surprised the first time I saw it. I went, "Wow, it's so early." But you know, why not? Yeah.
I just want to say, I know somebody else who is planning to come.
Yes.
I had a little difficulty connecting. Like I went to the website, like I was told, and when you scroll down, you have to copy the link.
I see.
To get into it. And so they may, I went back and forth a few times, so they may be doing the same.
Yeah. Well, there were some other people from the Sunday monthly mini retreat that, Wednesday, this past Sunday, who said they were going to come, but I knew they might have trouble getting in. So we'll see if they do come.
Is your retreat last Sunday going to be posted like the other one? Like it was on Dharma Seed, your last one.
Yes, Kathy hasn't posted it yet, but okay. It will be from this past Sunday. Yeah. Welcome, Jambi. Mm-hmm. And there's Ain. Hi, Ain. Yeah. Glad to see you.
I wonder if he has an exercise class he's going to also.
I don't think so. I doubt it.
That was a joke.
I know, because his friend is at an exercise class right now. Well, her name's still up there, but she's at an exercise class.
We can't have any gyms or anything open.
Well, she's probably online maybe at an exercise class.
Yeah.
We can't. I don't know where. No, she doesn't live here. Where did she say she lived? I don't remember.
Indiana or Ohio?
Indiana, I think. Maybe in Indiana they do. I don't know.
Well, our gyms are open here.
Are they here in Taos? Okay. Hi, Terry. There's Terry. Good evening. Yeah. Oh, and Susan. Hi, Susan.
Okay.
Good evening. Susan's in Texas. Oh, you're both here. Hi. Hello. Ain disappeared. He'll be back though. Yeah, maybe he had to do a little exercise before he could sit still. Ah, Edith. Hi, Edith. Some of our Sunday Sangha people are here.
We got an invitation.
Yes, you did. You certainly did. Absolutely. And Wesley. Hi, Wesley. Edith, where are you? Are you in Florida, Edith? I can't remember.
Seattle.
Seattle. I knew it was warmer where you are. Maybe it's warmer.
Well, a little, yeah. It's warmer than where you are, but it's not warm.
Yeah, we got 16 inches of snow by my house the other
day. Wow. Yeah, I heard that you had gotten a lot.
Quite amazing.
We've had one little tiny frost, maybe about 30 degrees. That's as cold as it's been. Mm-hmm. It's 50-something today.
Mm-hmm. And Wesley's in Boston. Howard Waitzkin is here. He disappeared, but he's in South Korea.
Yes, I'm here, Marcia. Thank you. I'll be right back.
Okay. Edley, hello.
Hello, hello. Mm-hmm. Hello, hello. Let's see here. Oh, okay. There we are, everyone. Hello, hello.
Hi, Wendy. Well, my clock is a little bit fast anyway, so I wonder what time the computer says. It's probably not quite 6 yet.
Yeah, my computer says 5:58.
Yeah, my clock, my regular clock, is about 2 minutes fast. I set it, but it keeps speeding up a little. So, oh well. Oh, hi, Joanna. Mm-hmm. Joanna's in Florida. Mm-hmm. How's your shoulder, Howard? Are you healing? Getting better?
Yeah, it's a rocky process, as you mentioned.
Oh, I know. I told you I've had two surgeries, and it's quite a process. Shoulder surgeries, yeah.
Still feeling fortunate.
A long time.
Still feeling fortunate.
Yeah. You look like you're okay, though. Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's equanimity, you know.
Equanimity, you need it. Tonight we're going to look at it a little closer. So this is good for you. Good for anybody. Good for everybody, actually. I'm having a few little allergies, just so you all know. I might have to sneeze or blow my nose or both during this time. The snow didn't quite get rid of all the pollen. It's on its way out, but still some around. There's Jean. Hi, Jean. So we'll wait about 1 minute and then we'll start. A few Taos Mountain Sangha people that might show up at the last minute. Taos people are really good at showing up at the last minute. We've been practicing it for a long time. And there's Sila. Hi there, Sila.
Where? Yes, where?
Where?
Yeah.
Are you speaking English?
Yes. Well, she said there. And I just
okay,
was...
Well, where is there? I got it. Well, yeah. I don't really know. But I do see a picture of you.
Okay. Well, anyway, it is a delight to see you all. Mm-hmm. Omnibus.
Adele? No, is it? I can't see the name. Tell me your name. She's muted.
Yes, Adele is here.
Adele. Hi, Adele. Yes. Ah, Taylor, there you are. Good. Okay. I think we will start. There may be a few latecomers yet from Taos and maybe other places that have also been practicing being a little bit late. But we'll begin anyway. So today, this evening, and I don't know if it's evening, what time of day is it, by the way, Howard, in South Korea right now? He doesn't.
9 a.m.
9 a.m., okay. So this evening and this morning. And if would you all please mute yourselves if you're not muted yet. Hi, Ron. Ron's here. Please mute yourself. Okay. So this evening and this morning, And any other time of day it might be for any of you, wherever you are. We're going to be exploring equanimity. Living our lives with balance and with equipoise. Living our lives with what's sometimes called the heart of greatness. True equanimity is our capacity to meet all of the various vicissitudes of life. And what I mean by that is praise and blame, gain and loss, pleasure and pain, fame and distinction, or disrepute, disrespect, disregard, all of these flip-flops that come our way throughout our life, all of us. And we're going to explore equanimity, which means meeting all of this with a heart, with a mind that's strong, that's fearless, that's centered, and that's at ease. Buddha said, develop the mind of equilibrium. You'll always be getting praise and blame. But don't let either affect the poise of the mind. And he went on to say, follow calmness. Be with the absence of pride. So we'll start our sit together. We'll sit for 30 minutes. And we'll start it in a little bit of an unusual way today. So sitting comfortably in your seat, chair, cushion, couch, wherever you're sitting. And we'll begin as though we're sitting under the Bodhi tree with Siddhartha Gautama, the Bodhisattva, this just about to be Buddha, on that now famous night as he was protected within the great strength of his mindful presence. This mindful presence enlivened by a keen interest and a penetrating sense of investigation, exploration, which was accompanied by clear discernment. This about to be Buddha, supported by the tremendous energy of his determination and the flow of an effortless effort, imbued with an enlivening and refreshing joy. This was balanced within the deep power and the cool ease of an unwavering, undistracted mind. Siddhartha Gautama sitting under the Bo tree that now famous night with unshakable stability, with an evenness and a balance of receptive, open-hearted presence, as though he were an immovable mountain, the mountain of equanimity. So letting yourself sense and feel into this as you're sitting.
The practice of equanimity is done by silently repeating usually just one phrase to yourself. This nurtures the development of the heart, of the mind, of equanimity. I'm going to offer you three phrases, and I would encourage you to just pick one of them, whichever one resonates with you right now. May I accept all things as they are. May I be undisturbed by the comings and goings of things, people, and events. And the third phrase, which is the classical equanimity practice phrase, I am the owner or I am the heir of my own karma. My happiness or suffering depends upon my actions, not upon my wishes for myself. And I'll repeat this one because it's kind of long. I am the owner or I am the heir. You can use either one. I am the owner or I am the heir of my own karma. My happiness or suffering depends upon my actions, meaning my actions of mind, thought, speech, and body. My happiness or suffering depends upon my actions, not upon my wishes for myself. So just choose one phrase for your practice today, the one that works best for you right now. And as you're sitting for our practice period, repeating this one phrase and taking your time with it, there's no hurry, repeating it silently within your own heart and mind, and staying mindful. Notice what comes up. What comes up in the mind, what comes up in the body, but not getting caught up, not being seduced into thoughts and emotional states and physical phenomena, physical sensations, just noticing. Noticing with the heart of kindness. Letting it go. Not kicking it out, just letting it pass. And come back to the phrase that you're using. Come back to equanimity practice. And I'll ring the bell at the end of the sitting period.
May I accept all things as they are. Or may I be undisturbed by the comings and goings of things, people, and events. Or I am the heir or the owner of my own karma. My happiness or suffering depends upon my actions, not upon my wishes for myself. when the attention wanders or the mind spaces out, just simply noticing this and gently, with a kind heart mind, just begin again with the equanimity practice. Letting the thoughts go, letting the spaced out experience go, and just begin again. May all of the wholesome energies and the fruits that manifest through our practice serve with immeasurable impartiality, without bias, without prejudice, towards the welfare, the happiness, and the awakening of all beings everywhere. Which of course includes ourselves. So we'll take 5 minutes right now. You can stretch a little bit. Do a few minutes of walking meditation. Use the bathroom. Have a drink of water. And you don't have to do all of those things in 5 minutes, but whichever one you need to do. And I will ring the bell at the end of the 5 minutes to come back. And I'll offer some Dhamma talk, Dhamma reflection. Thank you. And so I'll begin now with some Dhamma reflection. What do the Buddhist teachings have to offer us in times of stress and turbulence and uncertainty? I think it's a radical notion that when we cultivate an equanimous heart, mind, even the most extreme external or internal circumstances don't necessarily throw us off balance. With metta as our ground, we gradually move towards the teachings and the practice of equanimity, upekkha in Pali. Equanimity brings a clear seeing and acceptance and a balance of mind and heart, allowing us to then relate to all that comes and goes within us and around us with greater and greater understanding and ease. The great Buddhist teacher, ancient Buddhist teacher Shantideva said, it's not possible to control all external events. But if I simply control my mind, what need is there to control other things? So how do we as Buddhists or Buddhist practitioners or Buddhist people of interest in Buddhism, how do we meet the challenges of our time? What is equanimity? What isn't equanimity? How does it act? What are some of its results? Here in Taos, as others of you who live in this area know, we have what's considered to be a sacred mountain. It's one amongst many of the high mountains that surround this Taos Valley. This mountain is actually within the Taos Pueblo, the village of the Tiwa Indians that sits on the north edge of this town. And this particular mountain is sacred to the Tiwa people. It's also a sacred symbol for many Taosinos. And I have the great good fortune to be able to look out at it and to take it in every season, any time of the day and any time of the night, any day of the year, as it's very clearly visible from where I live. This mountain, any mountain, just simply sits where it is. The sun shines on it, rain and hail and snow fall down on it. Lightning strikes it. Fires sometimes rage on it. All sorts of life forms are born and die on it, living out their particular life patterns on and with this mountain. The mountain remains unshakable, unwavering. The mountain of what we could say radical acceptance is, the mountain of impartiality, the mountain of equanimity. The mountain itself is a live energy, but it only exists in relationship to all of the myriad lively, constantly changing energies that constitute it. The mountain appropriately sustains and it supports the activity that it's intricately and intimately connected to. The mountain of equanimity doesn't cling on. It isn't attached, nor is it averse to anything. So we could say that it lets life live through itself, closing off to nothing and holding on to nothing. And all of this happens with the amazing grace of impartiality and balance. Equanimity is potentially a very powerful force in our practice and a very powerful force in the whole of our life. Equanimity was the final factor to come into full maturity before Siddhartha Gautama, the Buddha to be, attained full awakening, attained full enlightenment, as he sat under the Bodhi tree that now famous night. As he sat there with an evenness and balance in his relaxed and very powerful presence within his amazing grace, as though he were an immovable mountain, seeing things clearly and relinquishing, letting go, relinquishing every attachment to all formations of body and mind. And then breaking through to the great awakening, breaking through to the complete ending of suffering. Equanimity is the fearlessness, it's the power and the equilibrium of the mind, the heart, to experience all kinds of change. The fearlessness, the power, and the balance of heart and mind to experience every sort of manifestation of change in relationship to all of our internal experiences and all of the external phenomena that we encounter, whether these experiences are pleasant or whether they're unpleasant as they arise, change, and pass away. Equanimity is the fearlessness, the great strength, and the ease of the mind, the heart, to remain centered, to remain unmoved in the midst of it all. The literal translation of upekkha, or equanimity, is onlooking. Equanimity looks on at the occurrence of physical and mental pleasure and pain by maintaining a neutral mode, by staying in the center, we could say, staying in the middle, watching things, observing and seeing clearly, watching things as they arise and as they pass. On looking, it sees them fairly. It sees them without favoritism and without bias. It sees them with what we could say without partiality. So we could say that the function of equanimity is to inhibit partiality. Consequently, equanimity manifests as neutrality. Upekkha, or equanimity, is the equipoise, as I've already mentioned. It's the balance or the equilibrium between the opposing forces of our mind, of the desired and the undesired. This equipoise of equanimity offsets the weightiness, the heaviness of greed, and the heaviness or weightiness of any manifestation of aversion. It's that point of balance in the middle of the great seesaw of life. The mind, the heart, doesn't move towards, nor does it move away. I remember as a child that I just loved to find the point of balance when I was playing on the what we call the teeter-totter or the seesaw with another child. When both of us would be suspended and perfectly balance in the midair in our teeter-totter seats. Maybe you had that experience as a child too. For me, there was always a kind of happy and almost breathtaking feeling inside when this would happen. The poet T.S. Eliot said it quite beautifully. He said, "At the still point of the turning world, neither flesh nor fleshless, neither from nor towards, at the still point, there the dance is. But neither arrest nor movement, and don't call it fixity, where past and future are gathered, neither movement from nor towards, neither ascent nor decline. Except for the point, the still point, there would be no dance, and there is only the dance." This still point of equanimity, and this is very important, it's a place of really great protection, while at the same time being an experience of great spaciousness and great strength in the mind, great strength of heart. To bring us a very practical understanding of this, we can use the metaphor of putting a spoonful of salt in a cup of water. Because of the very small container, the water, of course, will be extremely salty and very harsh and undrinkable. The Buddha used this same example, and he also used the next example I'm going to offer. On the other hand, if we put a spoonful of salt into a very large body of water, say the size of the Rio Grande River, which is our largest river here in New Mexico, it won't have the same effect at all. Why? Because of the enormous amount of water, because of the great fluidity, because of the great spaciousness, we could say, that the salt is poured into. And of course, every one of us know that life can be quite salty at times. We know that daily, almost, maybe now. It's just how it is. Life can be very salty at times. So one aspect of this development of equanimity is about creating the spaciousness of mind and heart with which we can meet and look on at all of life's everyday experiences, as well as all of the subtleties of the internal and external phenomena that we come to see and know in the midst of our practice. And to look on with balance, with equipoise, with the heart of greatness, with what in the Buddhist sutras or suttas is called to look on with a specific neutrality. During the second half of the 8th century in China, there was a civil war that occurred because of great upheaval, political, social upheaval. There was a civil war that ushered in famine and ushered in disease that was so devastating that 2 out of 3 Chinese people died. The population in this part of China shrunk by 2/3 in about 10 years. One of the great Chinese poets at the time who lived in this particular area of China where this was going on wrote a poem called "The View This Spring" that contained just 2 lines. "The nation is destroyed. Mountains and rivers remain." Our practice offers us the opportunity to more and more clearly observe, recognize, and look on with a specific neutrality in relationship to our own body-mind process and in relationship to our world, in relationship to things always changing. Always, we could say, getting broken and mended and broken again. And yet there's also something that never breaks. As our practice develops and deepens, we more and more clearly come to sense and see and know that everything, everything arises and falls away. Everything's coming and going all of the time. And at the same time, we can begin to sense and see and know that in the moments of all of this coming and going, arising and falling away, we could say things go nowhere at all. We can grow into sensing, seeing, and knowing all of this, not as two separate ways of seeing, but rather as one clear and seamless, one seamless, we could say, field of vision. That's our possibility. And maybe you have moments of that. On a very practical level, in the immediacy of our right now, here and now, we can see and know that there, for instance, are no red states and no blue states. There's just Kansas and Michigan and California and Georgia in all of their constantly, constantly changing complexity. And of course, equanimity comes and goes for us a lot until it has really, truly matured. And until it has really, truly matured, we lose and regain the balance and the equipoise of equanimity over and over again. So just a little bit of a personal story regarding this. Quite a number of years ago, for the whole last 2 weeks of a very long retreat that I was sitting, I practiced equanimity in the way that it's practiced as a Brahmavihara, very similar to the instructions that I gave at the beginning of our time together today. And I was silently repeating to myself, and first directing it to myself, and then going through all the same categories that we use for metta practice, repeating one phrase. And I used the classical phrase, I am the heir of my karma. I am the heir of my actions, speech, my actions of speech, mind, and body. My happiness and suffering depends upon my actions, not upon my wishes for myself. Well, by the end of those 2 weeks of a very concerted equanimity practice, day and night, all day, not all night, I did sleep a little bit, but not much though. Seemed like there was a very deep and quiet sense of balance and of evenness and neutrality in the mind and heart. A day or two before the end of the retreat, the thought came up, ah, yes, there's equanimity here. Seems to be a fairly deep and abiding equanimity. And then the next thought that came up was, I wonder if there's an equanimity test. Well, I kept thinking there for a little while, and I thought, if this was a Zen retreat, any good Zen teacher would do something creatively startling to check my equanimity. But this is a Vipassana retreat, and Vipassana teachers don't do things like that. And then this little series of thoughts just disappeared. But in fact, later that day, I was startled, we could say, in true Vipassana fashion, an equanimity test Vipassana style. I got a note that was signed by my equanimity teachers, though the note was by one person only, but the note was actually from all five of the teachers who were teaching that retreat. And the note said, we would like you to give the Dana talk. We would like you to give the generosity talk to the retreatants tomorrow. Well, for a moment, or maybe a little bit longer than a moment, equanimity, my well-developed equanimity, flew right out the window. And it felt like my heart stopped when I read that note. And the old habit of fear flew right in the window and right into my heart. And the thought came, I can't do this now. I've been silent for so many weeks and so deeply into practice. I can't get up in front of all my fellow retreatants and speak. It's impossible. I can't do it. I had not taught Dharma. I was not a Dharma teacher at that point. I wasn't even considering that possibility at that point. And then, after a few minutes of this great fear in the heart and the mind began to relax. And it recognized what had just occurred. Mindfulness came back. And the thought came in, yes. This is my equanimity test, of course. And I can do it. And I want to do it. And at that moment, immediately following those thoughts, a tremendous flood of gratitude came into the heart and the mind. Gratitude for the teachers and for the retreat center staff. Gratitude for the teachings. Gratitude for the practice. And just as suddenly as it had gone, equanimity was back. And what I was being asked to do felt like the most natural thing in the world to be doing. So again, until equanimity has matured, we lose and we regain the balance and the equipoise of equanimity over and over and over again. Upekkha manifests as quieting the fear, dislike, the resentment, and the self-judgment that can sometimes manifest as guilt, maybe disapproval, and sometimes the feeling that I'm not good enough. It also manifests as quieting liking, quieting pride and attachment, and the judgment of approval in relationship to what we think of as ourself. Me, my very own experiences. Equanimity also manifests as quieting the attachment or the fear that comes up in relationship to others. When equanimity has arisen and is developing, in those moments, fear, resentment, attachment, identification, and the judgments of approval or disapproval subside. They take a break. Within the clear space of a momentary or longer true neutrality, there's nothing for greed and nothing for aversion to stick to when they start to arise. The old habits of them starts to arise. There's a wonderful little book of teachings from the 12th century Zen master Dogen called How to Cook Your Life, where Dogen uses the work of the monastery cook and our relationship to food to teach us. in this case, to teach us about equanimity. And we, of course, can bring this teaching immediately close to our own life when we're home cooking for ourselves or cooking for friends, cooking for our family. Dogen says this: handle even a single leaf of a green in such a way that it manifests the body of the Buddha. This in turn allows the Buddha to manifest through the leaf. This is a power you cannot grasp with your rational mind. It operates freely according to the situation in a most natural way. At the same time, this power functions in our lives to clarify and settle activities and is beneficial to all living beings. And then he goes on, a dish is not necessarily superior because you've prepared it with choice ingredients, nor is a soup inferior because you have made it with ordinary greens. When handling and selecting greens, do so wholeheartedly, with a pure mind and without trying to evaluate their quality, in the same way in which you would prepare a splendid feast. In practicing the Dharma, delicious and ordinary tastes are the same and not two. There's an old saying, he says, the mouth of a monk, the mouth of a Dhamma student, a Dharma student, the mouth of a meditation practitioner is like an oven. Just as an oven burns both sandalwood for incense and cow dung for cooking without distinction, our mouths should be the same. There should be no distinction between delicious food and food which is plain and simple. We should be satisfied with whatever we receive. Now, of course, at the time of Dogen, they didn't have electric stoves and gas-run stoves. It was cow dung that fired up their stoves. And I'm sure that every one of us right here and now has experienced the pretense of equanimity within ourselves in the midst of experiences of greed or dislike or resentment or anger or fear or disappointment. We've all know this. We've all experienced it, which often means glossing over or ignoring these states and pretending, the pretense of equanimity, pretending to ourselves, well, it doesn't really matter. Or maybe, well, it's all really just fine. I'm really, really just fine. Which may be accompanied by a slight or maybe not so slight moving away from a mental and physical contraction in relationship to particular experiences. This is not equanimity. It's actually indifference. Indifference is called the near enemy of equanimity. Indifference masquerading as upekkha or equanimity. Equanimity is not indifference. And of course, I think every one of us here know from our own experience that when we're really inflamed with greed or dislike or anger or fear or disappointment or resentment, it's very, very difficult, or maybe even impossible, of those moments to look on at those moments, those experiences, with a true equanimity. So we need to be honest with ourselves and not pretend equanimity. Equanimity is based on an attentive, clear presence of mind, not on dullness and not on indifference. And it's also not a kind of casual passing mood. And it's not produced by exertion. And it's not created by the intellect. It's a result. It's really one of the fruits of our practice. The fruit of training the heart, training the mind through the development and the blossoming of the factors of mindfulness, investigation, a balanced effort, joy, tranquility, concentration, loving kindness, and compassion. And as I mentioned briefly a few minutes ago, true equanimity is our capacity to meet all of the vicissitudes of life, what the Buddha called the eight worldly winds: praise and blame, gain and loss, pleasure and pain, fame or distinction, and disrepute or disrespect or disregard. To meet all of these flip-flops of life with a heart, with a mind that's strong, fearless, centered, and at ease. True equanimity is able to meet each of these so-called worldly winds. And it's also easily able to regenerate its strength from our inner resources. These inner resources that have been developed through our diligent practice. True equanimity possesses the power of protection. And this is really important. It's a very powerful protection. And it's also creates the wholesome resistance. This is also very important. It also creates the wholesome resistance in relationship to the mind, the heart, getting seduced by and caught up into states of fear and greed and aversion. So a question. Are you a news junkie? You don't have to answer, but just consider. Are you a news junkie? And if so, how does this affect your mind, your body, and your heart? Consider that. What are your choices? You have choices. Equanimity has the power of renewing itself, but only if it's really deeply rooted in a growing insight into the true nature of things and how what we choose, the actions of our mind, body, heart, are. What do we choose? Every moment, every circumstance is another chance to experience things as they are, as they really truly are, rather than as we wish or fear them to be. As we drop more deeply into the presence and the wisdom within our own heart mind of equanimity in relationship to the way of things, we're rendered free to use this treasure of equanimity, to respond to the life within us and to respond to the life around us in a healthy, wholesome, appropriate way. And as the Buddhist teacher Joan Sutherland said, it's our freedom to fall willingly into the frightened, blasted, beautiful, tender world just as it is. To know for ourselves that we have that treasure, and that we're free to use it, no matter the circumstances. This is our possibility. And as the 8th century Chan Buddhist teacher Ma said, this is a happy life. So I'd like to close the Dhamma talk this evening with a poem. It's a poem by William Stafford, and he calls it The Way It Is. There's a thread you follow. It goes among things that change, but it doesn't change. People wonder about what you're pursuing. You have to explain about the thread, but it's hard for others to see. While you hold it, you can't get lost. Tragedies happen. People get hurt or die, and you suffer and get old. But nothing you do can stop time's unfolding. You don't ever let go of the thread. So let's sit quietly for just a couple of moments. Thank you for listening to the Dhamma, and thank you for your practice. So we have some time for questions, for sharing of your own practice, which I would probably offer some reflection back to you that hopefully would be of help. any comments you'd like to make?
Marcia?
Hold on a minute. I'm not quite done yet. Yes, and I'd like to keep it related to practice. Our Dhamma discussion here, and I don't want to get into a sort of meandering philosophical conversation. As much fun as that might be for some of you, we're just not going to go there right now. So it's open. You can all unmute yourselves if you'd like. And you could also say where you're from, because people are from a number of different places here this morning, this evening, this afternoon. And do remember that there's a quite a number of people here, so don't speak too long. Okay, it's open.
Marcia, it's Joanna.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from an area near Tampa Bay, Florida. It's a town called Lando Lakes, because there are a lot of lakes. Mm-hmm. And when I was doing the equanimity, I chose, may I accept all things as they are.
Mm-hmm.
So it was quite enjoyable. And getting into it, all of a sudden, it kind of like switch, and the mind goes, may I accept all things as I am? So you know, then it's, oh, no, that isn't it. I go back to that. But I went, no, well, it could be it. Stay with
why
this.
Not? That could be it.
Yeah, so I did. I stayed with that for a while.
Sometimes, too.
Pardon me?
It might be a little more challenging sometimes for some people.
Yes. So then I stayed with that, and then it switched over to the others, kind of going back and forth a little bit. And then it all just stayed with accepting all things as they are. And it seemed not to make a difference very much after a while.
After a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. It's a challenge, though. Equanimity is a challenging practice. It borders right up on insight practice. And sometimes things are challenging, right? In this life.
I have one word.
It's valuable. Oh. Who's speaking now?
Edla.
Where are you? I have to find you. There you are. Hi, Edla.
Hi.
Let people know where you are. I know where you are, but maybe some don't.
Blueberry Hill, Taos. Or El Prado, actually. But
well, people know Taos. They might not know El Prado. Yes. Go ahead, Edla.
I just had one word, and that's humbling.
Humbling. It's a humbling practice.
Very.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to say anything about it at all in terms of your personal experience?
Well, you know, it's a practice that it comes at the end of the metta practice for a good reason, because there's so many of the other elements that sort of have to be incorporated in the being, in my being, in order for it to even understand how I can stay in equanimity.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing I know it isn't is withdrawal.
No, and, not at all.
Right. And that's the danger of it for me, is to just want to flip into withdrawal. And that's when I said, no, you stay alive, stay here, be here with whatever it is.
Yes.
But accept it. And it's definitely a practice.
It sure is. It sure is. Thank you. Yes, I did talk about that somewhat in the Dhamma reflection. And it's not withdrawal at all. Not one bit. That is not equanimity. That's called withdrawal. Avoidance, hiding, etc. All those kinds of things. It's not an equanimous heart and mind. So it's a challenge for sure. Yeah, thank you. Anybody else? We still have some time. I left enough, a little more time today than sometimes with Taos Mountain Sangha. There never seems to be very much time to have some discussion. So today we have some time.
Just wondering if I may, Marcia Taos.
Yes, Sila.
Thank you. Seems like upekkha, sati, vipassana are all very similar words. How and why do we use them differently?
I want you to explain what's going on in your mind when you say that.
If upekkha is looking on.
Yes, looking on is a
literal. Sati is really mindfulness, observing mind.
Observing mind, yes.
And vipassana is insight. Again, it's observing.
Well, the process is observation, but insight arises out of clear seeing.
clear observation, connection and observation.
Don't upekkha and sati.
They're very connected. They're very connected. Yes. Don't mute yourself. You just muted yourself.
Yeah.
We're having a discussion.
I just kind of had the question about how and why we
separate them.
Yeah, use the different terms.
I think that's a good question, and there's good some good reasons for that. Upekkha practice, equanimity practice, especially if we use the classical phrase, I am the heir of my own karma, my happiness or suffering depends upon my actions, not upon my wishes for myself. It really pushes us, pushes the mind, heart mind, right into the potential of insight practice, of seeing things really clearly. What does that mean? That kind of a phrase that we repeat over and over, at first people say it doesn't make sense. A lot of people think it doesn't make sense. And then they keep repeating it and they practice with sincerity and it starts to unfold. It starts to blossom and we begin to see what it is experientially. What does it mean? Can we see clearly? Can we see the actions, the thoughts, the bodily experiences, the experiences of the heart more and more and more clearly? And eventually not react and come to a place of balance, of seeing clearly and equanimity, but it's a process. So I think in Vipassana, in the Theravada practice, in the Theravada teachings and practices, we do make separations. They're not really separations, but we do make definitions of various aspects of practice that are all integrated for sure. But the development of our heart and mind, there is a kind of map that happens for pretty much everybody, with variations, of course, because of our own particular conditioning. And so we separate it out, in a sense, as various practices that lead us eventually into the clarity and the open mindedness and open-heartedness of the potential of freedom. I don't know if that helps in response to your question, but so just assuming, you know, it's all the same, we don't know, people don't know where to go with it, what to do with it. It's just words. It's concepts. We're trying to go beyond concepts to direct experience. I think that's maybe a better way to say it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Sila. Hope that's helpful. Yeah, sort of. He goes, maybe. Anybody else? We still have a little bit of time, a couple of minutes left. If anybody else.
Mic is open.
Yes, Howard, you wanna? Howard, you're not, okay, Howard. Did you also wanna say something, Wesley?
Yes, can I say something?
Let Howard, I saw Howard hand first, so then you're next, and then go ahead, Howard.
So the part that I have trouble with in the equanimity practice is the term acceptance. Uh-huh. And I have always felt a deep aversion to that, as opposed to...
What word would you use?
Well, as opposed to, for instance, not becoming uncentered by the comings and goings of mm-hmm. people, objects, and events. And I just wanted to share that...
Does the word acceptance to you apply passivity?
Well, it's ambiguous.
I'm asking you how you feel.
It does. It's the element of Buddhism that accepts slavery, for example.
Okay. In our practice of equanimity, if we use the word acceptance, it does not mean passivity. It's not what it means. If you don't accept something, you cannot, then you're averse to it. You won't be able to see it clearly. You have some kind of a barrier, but it's not passivity. It really is not. And you can't act appropriately in a very deeply connected way with a deep understanding and insight if you first don't accept whatever it is you're seeing, sensing. If you just are averse to it, that's it. You're stuck.
So it doesn't imply lack of resistance.
No. Acceptance? No, it's not resistance at all.
No, lack of resistance.
Lack of resistance. What does resistance mean to you?
Well, it means more basic level, not accepting things as they are and struggling to change them.
And well, that's not what resistance means. It doesn't mean anything to do with struggling to change anything. It's resisting. It's contracting against. That's not what we're talking about. If you can accept something, I did speak a little bit about it in the talk, and we've had this discussion before many times in different ways, you and I. Acceptance is absolutely necessary in order to act, to respond instead of react appropriately in any given situation with any given occurrence. If there's resistance, there's contraction against, and you can't act out of in that place of tight contraction against. We don't know what to do. We're shut up and shut down to varying degrees.
One sentence that resistance in that, or acceptance, is being willing to see things as they are, including the unpleasantness.
Yes.
And not be trapped by the fact that it is pleasant or unpleasant.
Right.
Or
yes. Did you want to say something?
No, just that. Pleasant,
yes. Unpleasant. That's right. I did say that in the talk, and I appreciate you repeating it. Thank you. Yeah, it's perfect. Yes. Thank you. So I hope that helps to clarify a little bit of your resistance, Howard.
Just here very briefly.
We're done. So I think we have to stop because somebody else wants to talk. Thank you. Go ahead, Wesley.
Oh, well, Marcia, I just had a question about the practice.
Please.
So sometimes with equanimity, it seems like the mind's becoming like too dull or too rigid, and I'm losing like the sense of kindness or it's just like too, it's almost too neutral. And
it's not equanimity anymore. It's not equanimity anymore. You've closed down in some way. And it's important to notice when that starts to happen. When you start to back away or close up or get stuck in a kind of seeming equanimity, a neutrality that's disconnected. You start to disconnect.
Okay. I think that makes sense.
You need to look at that in yourself, in your process, in your process of practice, and also in your daily life process. Your daily life is your practice. And that's not that unusual for that to happen. But if we don't notice it, then we can be caught up in that. We can get caught in it. And it is very dull. There's no life, almost no life force in it. It's a flat state.
See, I think there's sort of a tendency to look for pleasure with the equanimity, and there isn't as much pleasure. So it's like, maybe it's not dullness so much. It's like, it's just neutral.
Well, so neutrality and dullness are not the same thing, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
And equanimity is not pleasant or unpleasant. Mm. I mean, true, mature equanimity is not a state of pleasantness or unpleasantness. Mm. It's a state of clear presence and seeing clearly. It's a state of what Sila inferred before of the similarity. It's sati, it's clear seeing. Without any reactivity, without any clinging. Mm-hmm. It's very alive though, very alive, full of life. Yeah. Right, okay, I think we have to stop now. We're a little bit over time. Thank you though, everybody. Good to see you all. Yes, Jean.
Marcia, thank you so much for, I think, a very timely talk. I'm one of those news junkies who deals with indifference or walking away. So Edla's commentary about how humbling this practice is really hit the mark, as did your talk. Thank you. And to all of you, thank you for supporting our practice by being here. And as you all know, our teachers come with a gift of priceless teachings, and your Donna can make the difference in their ability to continue teaching. So please be as generous as your circumstances allow. You can donate in a number of different ways. Marcia has a donation page on the Mountain Hermitage. Or if you send money to Taos Mountain Sangha, we have an online donation link on our programs page and on our front page. And if you say, I want this to go for Donna, for Marcia, that's what happens. Or you can send a check to Taos Mountain Sangha. The address is on our website. Please be as generous as you can. We so appreciate all that you do. And next week, Sila will be here. It'll be post-election, although we might not know the results yet. But I suspect practicing equanimity between now and then could...
May it happen.
May it happen. Thank you.
It's an important time for the practice of equanimity, for sure. Thank you. Thank you, Jean.
Thank you all.
Take good care of yourselves this week. Yes.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, Marcia. Thank you.
Be well. Thank you for being here, everybody.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Marcia.